us listening.
And Bill's able to track that?
He's able to figure out some kind of approximate number. Like he should tell Bill, how many right now are listening on the level of the computer, just listening and not calling in and being on the phone line? What do you see, Bill?
Hey, Bob, did Bill take Ion's warning last week serious about Turbo Bridge?
He already was. First of all, he can't do anything about Turbo Bridge. That's technology. That's them out there somewhere. He can't tell them what to do. But he already, look at this. He already was fixing things because he is upgrading his studio, and he sent an email to someone. Let's see. Where he described, and he included me, he describes what he's doing. Okay, is this it? Just a second. Okay, here's what he says, what he's doing. Says, I'll need about 2 weeks to get this updated. I'm getting a major bandwidth upgrade here with a new 100 Mbit WAN fiber line to be installed Tuesday morning and going to all gigabit internal LAN and a stronger server at the studio. That should eliminate the skipping and dropout issues and will allow up to 4 simultaneous video streams into the mixer and more reliable upstream feed to achieve TV and YouTube Live. Also adding a new IRC-based chat system to replace the simple one we have now. Should all be ready in 2 weeks. And he supplements that saying, Google has software that can identify any copywritten music instantly, will tag the video and send out a nasty gram to my account. We do, however, simulcast everything on Achieve. This is why I don't have music on What Youth, because we want that on iTunes, so you can't have any anybody's music on there. And he says to Achieve TV, which is just an RTMP module on one of my servers. The IRC switch will happen as soon as I work out a simple enough web client for the noobs to use, but will also be usable by any regular IRC client. So I'm just showing you the technical talk that he's working on. So from his point of view, he was already upgrading the system that Ion was demanding. So the next question is, so Ion, does he still have to do something with Turbo Bridge? In other words, does he have to tell Turbo Bridge to do something, which they won't understand why he's telling them, because they think he has nothing to do with it. So we may have a communication problem if what Bill's doing is not what Ion says is required. Right?
Yeah. The question is that Ion give that warning due to that their power is increasing, so in order for them to engage in payday, it require a larger capacity to engage.
I think he did some gimmickry tonight, but one of it was, I said, okay, start answering everybody more than once, because he'll go along and answer and then do a side answer in the middle of a general answer to someone else. Like several times tonight, I went over to Carol and I wanted to tell her something, and can't remember now. I got her on mute. I told her what I wanted, and as I was doing it, Ion says it to her, what I was telling her. You know, so he was listening to me say it to Carolyn, and we were on mute. You couldn't hear me technically, and he did that twice. He commented on the instructions I was giving somebody a second ahead of me. So if he can do that, he can address that, he can address this, he can address multiple situations. So why not maybe say 3 questions at him, 3 conversations going on, and have Ion respond to the 3 conversations simultaneously?
Yes. So they're really heavily
into what?
Heavily into this environment, because a month ago or so, they played 2 songs at the same time.
Yes.
There was 2 different instances where there were 2 songs played simultaneously.
Well, he'll start updating what Zappa was doing. I think there's a lot more Ion can do technically and create hallucinating environments or whatever you want to call them. You know, Mobius vortexes. He will, Yeah, he has to have a strong studio to do it, because maybe, you know, he emits more non-physical energies that zaps our crude electricity and the electrons melt. And, I mean, we're just with our coal play, we've got, it's so powerful, it does, it affects the materials we use, and these are the strongest materials known to humanity. And it's still, we have to update that.
Mm.
I think I also referred to that tonight.
Also, by the way, the when the Turbo Bridge went out, that was when John was on talking about electricity. The electricity part two is when the Turbo Bridge example.
Yeah, a few months ago.
Yeah, no, last year.
Yeah, you know, a few months ago, a year ago.
A few months ago, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's right. The topic and the themes were energized or resonant and they got manifested because I was saying the words. You're talking about John, the Bible guy, the Revelator?
No, John, the guy from Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
Who did the questioning for the electricity.
That's right. He was probing that and trying to fit it back into the known stuff. And it just gave Ion a, he got pissed off, right? So he just sort of exhaled exasperatedly and blew out Turbo Bridge.
Yes. Yes.
So are you sleeping, Eliza? No? She's speaking.
No,
what are you doing?
I'm not.
You're dozing?
No. Are you going to read the article?
Alan Cabal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's read. He gives an update. Did you look at it? Did you read the new one?
No, I haven't. He actually posted two since the last one we read.
Two of them, you're saying? Two.
Yeah, so the last one we read was...
I know last week's. I didn't see this week's. I'm going to read last week, then maybe we'll read this week's. But... 2 weeks last week was an update on Daisy. Remember, her junky son was coming, and he was pissed off.
Yeah, the last time you read it, that's what it was—the antipathy of junkie for junkies.
Right, and that's the last one. So that's there's only one to read then. If there's not a new one yesterday.
So no, that was the last one we read. But since that time, he posted two more up.
Okay, we didn't cover last week.
Yeah, we read the one where the junkie's coming. We haven't read what happened when the junkie came, and then there's now you're saying a third one, so we got to read two. But Bert, is there anything more about Zappa? I mean,
no,
what talking
all.
About.
All for now. There'll be more because it's a very interesting article. I mean, it indicates to me the guy was really ahead of his time and a genius and the last composer. And that's the question I always had because I had exposed to classical music when I was younger. And as I got older and interested in music, I always had a question, how come there's no one really composing? And now I have my answer.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know, I mean, unless you come to Dobbstown, that there was a guy doing it, and the media suppressed him.
Yes.
They would not let people know it was happening.
Yeah, there was go ahead.
You know, I'm done.
No, it's just that it's interesting that I read something in the article about the music stores, that the music stores didn't even cover him. Only in California or certain parts of Los Angeles they would cover his music. Not everyone covered his music, which is...
Well, he found out the very first album, which he advertised in kids' comic books and everything, Freak Out in summer of 66. Years later, he found out, he knew that... A lot of them went out, but he didn't get a decent check. Found out they were warehoused by the mafia in some place and stolen, and I don't know what they did with them, but they ripped them off from the beginning.
Wow.
It's like the mafia ran a lot of the music industry, and this guy was brazenly criticizing the environment of it. And they didn't want that to be understood. Well, they didn't want the vibe of Frank. Just like they wouldn't let Mae Brussel or Skolnick in the major media. They didn't want his integrity being communicated to people. Keep him in the dark.
Yeah, you just presented a unique angle on yours and Ike's conversation on how he was killed.
Yeah.
Because
it
seems like he was under surveillance from the government as well as the mob didn't enjoy him also.
Yeah, when we did the interview with him in October 22nd, 1988, we did, what was it, 7 hours. So it's like 3.5 hours is the recorded part. And then we did 3.5 hours without it being recorded because he said his phone was tapped and he could hear it. And in my mind, I thought he demonstrated, but I don't think he did. But he just talked about it very vividly. He'd been tapped for years and he'd been blacklisted. They weren't allowed to play. I mean, people in the industry would tell him this. You know, I was working at this radio station. They told me you can't play any Zappa. The power of real art can communicate. And they were afraid of the power of his music, of his expression, because it was new, it was different. He used to say that. He said, you know, there are people like me, but if my music got more airplay, thousands more would love me. He knew people required that kind of music. Like you, wandering around looking for a composer. All you had to do was find out about Frank and Rick, yeah. And then sort of look at his stuff for a while, and then you'd figure it out.
Yeah, I also found it interesting that he was really big in Europe because the German, I mean, there's some German orchestras I saw on YouTube that actually are using the girl in the magnesium dress. There's some YouTubes of German orchestras playing that piece.
Well, you go to their site, they have a diary of all the orchestras that play his music all over the world for 30, 40 years now. No, I mean, his stuff, he's a recognized American composer now. He's on that level of he's part of the mainstream catalog now. You know, the younger Generation X and then the younger people, they were smarter and or just craving better music or had been mutated to a new sensibility that he communicated to, and they all play his music, all kinds of symphonies, every day.
That's great.
He's like in some ways, he's the establishment, but you have to read his interviews and listen to me talk about him and get into the other levels, then he's not so mainstream, even though a subset of himself can be accepted by the mainstream, you know?
Yes.
He's quadriphenic. That means he can communicate to many types. Many environments of our situation.
Didn't you say you have over a thousand of his songs or something like that?
I have it on my computer here. Yeah, I put most of his songs. Now I haven't bought the 50 or so albums that they've released since he died. I only got a couple of them. I'm thinking of maybe just putting a big order and just get them all. But I've got all the albums, 60 to 80 whatever sides, since he started up to when he died in 93, and that comes to about, I put them all on the computer, it comes to 1,200 songs.
Wow.
1,200 pieces is what I have.
Also, I remember reading a clip that he was using the computer before most people in the industry. Of course, the Synclavier, but he was actually storing music.
Yeah. He probably improved it. He probably, you know, he's the Renaissance image of a guy making inventions. He invented the feedback or the fuzz tone thing. He was part of the invention of that. The guy who had the first remote mic microphone, I knew him in New York, Kenny somebody. You can look him up, and there's a New Yorker profile of him. Kenny liked Zappa and presented his new technology to Frank first, and Frank was the first guitarist to use it, this remote pickup thing. Forget what it was. He was always the first to use whatever was coming down the pike and developing it, adding to it. When I talked to Zappa through the Evergreens, Michael Blake Reed gets images in the altered state. So when he comes out of trance, he describes the dream state, the images. And the first image he got was... He said there was a sound check, and Frank was checking and plugging in things and experimenting with plugs, you know, all afternoon before the performance in the evening. And he was there was a phrase, I can't remember now. Did we get that right, Frank? Something like that the musicians kept saying. But that was an accurate summation of Frank. He was the guy making sure the equipment was perfect and figuring out ways to make it better in the concert, in the club. That's the image that Michael had of Zappa. And it's very accurate to what Frank was like on the road. And it turned out that Roxy's like that. She was in this band, the only woman with these guys, and they'd be all running around taking drugs or looking for groupies, and she'd be the one hooking up the equipment. It pissed her off that she did all that, and these guys wouldn't help.
Mm. I have to make some timing. I started watching Baby Snakes yesterday.
Yeah.
That was really really interesting to see how they set up those clay images.
Bruce Bickford, yeah.
And Frank was shooting the different frames, and then I got to the point, and then I had to run off and do some things, but to show how they animated that, that's...
pretty tedious. He'd move an image, move the arm, take a picture, move the arm, and Frank was there clicking the picture for the guy, for Bruce Bickford, you know. The guy would move the clay, move it slightly, you know. And remember, in my great speech about that guy, they asked me what I thought. I said, the guy ought to get a life. Get a life, Bruce! Sitting around snapping these things, you know, sitting there making these little animations, which are incredible animations in the end, what he produced. Yeah. But I guess that's artistic patience. You know, it's like Sheila painting the eyebrows 100 times.
By the way, has Sheila heard your message about her message from Ion?
I don't think so. She's still on her honeymoon.
Oh,
it's like a two-week cruise or something. Okay, so I think that's it. So you got Alan Cabal, he's living. He and Daisy broke up, but it looks like they ended up down in someplace in Florida, someplace together again recently. And so it sounds like he got back with her. And I know she went and lived when they broke up, he was down in one part of Florida and she went to another part. So for some reason, he's involved and concerned about the junkie son arriving. And so this is called Indications of Character. And the subtitle is Daisy Isn't Stupid, But She's a Mother, Which Is Nearly as Bad. Get that? Being a mother is pretty bad nowadays. So he says, things got seriously ugly between Daisy and me last week. 2 weeks ago, her middle-aged junkie son arrived, on the lam from various criminal charges in Rhode Island, the sort of charges you get hit with when you're loaded on heroin and decide to go for a spin with a bunch of bags in your car. A heroin buzz really isn't conducive to driving. I won't even drive on Vicodin or Vicodin. Anybody know how to spell that?
Vicodin is right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I won't even drive on Vicodin. Naturally, he crashed it, meaning he crashed the car, and the cops nailed him. This was back in October. Junkies aren't known for their sparkling wit. Most of them are pretty stupid. That's why they're junkies. Daisy isn't stupid, but she is a mother, which is nearly as bad. A mother will stand by her son no matter what kind of mindless, reprehensible shit he gets into. Mine didn't, but my adoptive parents were uniquely perverse. They hated each other. Their marriage was the Dr. Zhivago of hate affairs. Dr. Zhivago is a Russian movie or a famous movie about Russia in the 60s. So their marriage was the Dr. Zhivago of hate affairs. I'm grateful for that. They inadvertently gave me a truly exceptional set of survival skills. Can you guys hear Carolyn's noise?
No, it's not so distracting.
Okay. They inadvertently gave me these substitute parents, adoptive parents. They inadvertently gave me a truly exceptional set of survival skills. Daisy's son, let's call him Jonah, had no such friction in his upbringing. He had actual biological parents who truly loved him and each other, who truly loved him and each other and nurtured him. His mother, a gifted and dedicated early childhood teacher, and his father, Michael, now the early childhood teacher, that would be Daisy, and his father, you remember she was always trying to get teaching gigs when they went across the states out to California. So the mother and his father, Michael, a small-time grifter psychopath, seemingly trying to become human at the time that they had the son, Jonah. They were hippies. Daisy didn't get the memo on Michael's serial womanizing until Jonah was in his early teens, but she stuck it out, and to his credit, so did Michael. They divorced somewhat amicably shortly after he turned 18, meaning Jonah, the junkie son. Daisy's upbringing in Florida was pretty rugged, though not nearly as saturated in psychotic violence as my own. Her father died an agonizing death when she was about 4 years old, a three-day ordeal resulting from imbibing a bad batch of moonshine. With two sons and Daisy, her mother struggled with desperate poverty until she hooked up with Ollie, a creepy pedophile with a locksmith business and a tow truck. He molested Daisy throughout her childhood. There's no way her mother didn't know. The brutal truth is that Daisy's mother pimped her out, pimped Daisy out to Ollie to keep bread on the table and a roof over their heads. So he's saying the mother pimped the daughter out to her stepfather. Years later, after Ollie had died, her mother, Daisy's mother, squandered every asset she'd inherited on lawyers and bribes to judges to get Daisy's brothers into country club prisons after they were busted for dealing cocaine. Daisy got nothing. Mothers and sons, it's like Darren Aronofsky's movie Requiem for a Dream, which I looked up and is pretty well close to what he's describing. I left Daisy's place with whatever valuables I'd stored there a couple days before Jonah arrived. He took his last dose of methadone on Wednesday, spent 22 hours on a train, and somehow managed to get here without attracting the attention of the Amtrak cops. I'd made a couple of very explicit threats to him about the potential consequences of ripping his mother off or fucking with her in any way. He responded by calling Michael, you know, his separated father, presently occupied with some failing arts-oriented scam in Key West and cheating on the woman who supports him. Michael called me and threatened me with the cops. Michael did prison time for ripping off his adoptive father for a substantial sum of money back when he was in his 20s. Not some youthful lark, but a true indicator of character or lack thereof. His karma came around when Jonah cleared out his bank account a few years back. I laughed and told him, quote, "You're a predicated felon, and you're going to call the cops on a 61-year-old cripple." That's Alan Cabal talking about himself. "You're going to call the cops on a 61-year-old cripple with no criminal record for threatening your junkie son, a fugitive from justice in Rhode Island? Good luck with that shit, asshole." That's what he said to Daisy's co-creator of Jonah. Within a couple of days of his arrival, Jonah told his mother that I'd made a pass at him in Key West back in 2000. That I was in Key West in 2000 is beyond dispute. I wrote a severely decadent article about my experience there for New York Press. I had some wild sex down there, exclusively heterosexual sex. I haven't come on to a man since the early 1980s, and Jonah ain't my type. I always preferred the David Bowie type, thin and blonde, like me. I'm a narcissist. I prefer sexual partners that look like me. Jonah is built like SpongeBob SquarePants. There's a direct swipe at me. Jonah is built like SpongeBob SquarePants. We all know I'm SpongeBob, right? I mean, you know, he probably looked at the Ian and Bob and saw the SpongeBob thing. He's out to get me. I know, Alan, what you're up to. Jonah is built like SpongeBob SquarePants, and he's as dumb as a post. I am primarily sapiosexual. So I had looked up sapiosexual and can't remember, so I got to do it again. Sapiosexual. Mm-hmm. Sapio. Something that tastes good. The Latin sapio means something that tastes good. Sapiosexual. Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, the Urban Dictionary. One who finds intelligence the most sexually attractive feature.
Oh, yeah. Smart people turn you on sexually. Right. So he responds to intelligent people, "I am primarily sapiosexual." Now, the Jonah's lie. The lie was intended to split Daisy and me. I went nuclear. Daisy, Jonah, and I exchanged some pretty vicious texts and emails, climaxing with her threatening to call the cops in an attempt to get me committed. I immediately called the cops to do a, quote, wellness check on her, explaining the situation in full. He who calls the cops first wins. Any subsequent attempt by her to send the cops around after me, would be perceived by them as a petty retaliation effort in a domestic dispute. I've been protecting and entertaining this woman, Daisy, for 15 years. She hasn't seen her son in 12 years. He only called her when he needed something. The antipathy between us goes back a few years. I pointed out to Daisy just how strange it is that he took 15 years to tell her I made a pass at him and reminded her that I never went for chunky junkies or junkies of any sort. I prepared to abandon our plan to move in together and retreat to my cousin's place in New Jersey. So this, we were wondering what he was going to do. And he also, remember, said he was going to leave America. So they, for some reason, they were planning to go back to that place in New Jersey he wrote about. I prepared to abandon our plan to move in together and retreat to my cousin's place in New Jersey. I sat in this Quonset hut for close to a week, drinking continuously and listening to Lou Reed's Berlin album over and over again. She'll die alone, I thought. I was going to take her to Denmark next summer. She'll never see Copenhagen, I thought. Like now, she'll never see Copenhagen. So there it is, Carol. He's planning going to Denmark. So, he says, I thought it all the way through. I dislike zero-sum games except poker. I'm not as cruel as I often pretend to be. She's smart and she's fun. I love her. If I leave her, the junkie wins. In every way, sticking to our original plan is a win-win situation. Joan is leaving on the 15th of this month. If my instincts are right, he'll turn blue in a filthy gas station bathroom with a needle hanging out of his arm. If I'm wrong, and I would truly like to be wrong for once, he'll clean up and thrive. She'll get to keep her son. That would be pleasing. I apologize. She apologized. We go on. So I assume there's a follow-up on this week, Eliza?
Yes, there's one after this.
Okay, so what do you think of that, Bert? This is white trash lifestyle?
Something similar. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, now, like, he's sitting there being crippled, and I'm harassing him because, hey, Alan, start taking our stuff. Probably not inclined to take it. But if he took it, he wouldn't be able to sit around being pissed off at everything. He'd actually die and get reborn.
And you know something? He's not very accessible. Like, he doesn't want to be contacted by fan mail or anything.
Yeah, you've written him and he didn't respond, right?
I didn't write him because I couldn't even find his email anywhere on the website. So I went to contact and I emailed the Zimmerman guy. I think he's like one of the guys you could contact for questions. He's the editor or something. And that was strange too. It wasn't going, like if you click on the link to his email, it wasn't going directly to an email address. But somehow I made it to where I was able to email him, but it took a while. It wasn't a 1-2-3 thing.
And it didn't go to Alan. It went to the Zimmerman.
Yeah, I went to the other guy, and I asked him to give me Alan Cabal's email address, but he never responded.
Right. So I can give you Cabal's address that I have, and I send it. It doesn't bounce back, so it's going somewhere. So I don't know if it's getting to him, but it is his email address that's been out there for a few years, and I don't know about the Zimmerman route. I didn't do that. So I'm sending it, but he's not responding. I think he's basically antisocial. He's planning to leave the country. He doesn't want to make any friends, he doesn't care in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what he says on this week's show. It's called Pity for Roadkill. And it says, subtitle, She's Just a Sad Raccoon. Okay, so bring this up.
That's something else I wanted to ask Gaia.
About the animals dying?
Yeah, they don't feel any pain. Yeah, but it's the shrieks and the way they yell.
That's the biology. That's the biology. That's the mechanism. They're shrieking with delight.
With tears coming down their eyes?
Yeah, like an orgasm. Didn't you ever cry when you had a good orgasm?
Not like that.
Do Afghanis have orgasms? How's your culture doing in that department?
I think Afghanis have orgasms, yeah.
Yeah, in what was that? State of Affairs or Homeland? Maybe it was Homeland. They have this Afghani terrorist guy, and he's been on the road for a long time.
Oh, yeah, when he has sex in front of
the head of the CIA.
Yeah,
the CIA guy, former CIA director.
I don't think that would be taking place in real life. They're more modest.
Yeah, but it was he had been with his wife in a long time, you assume. So he's there with his wife, and they're having a good time right in front of the cop. I mean, the CIA guy. So, yeah, you saw that. That's the only image I have of Afghani sex at this point so far.
That's like
Is he an Afghani? Is he Afghanistan? Is he supposed to be that guy? I think he is.
I don't know. I think they really try to find someone who looked Afghani, but...
I don't know whether he is, but the character, I think he's an Afghani terrorist.
I think he Afghani. He was either Afghani or Pakistani.
Pakistani. Now, I'll tell you, the fucking stupid hats they got to wear, it's so ridiculous, these tribal cultures. The costumes they wear every
don't
day.
Don't even get me started on that.
Oh, you agree with me?
Uh-oh.
I hold my tongue. I try not to say anything. See, with other Afghanis, I can go in and I can just go on and on about it, but it's not the same when I'm talking to people who are not Afghanis.
Right. Just like we can't talk about black situation if you're not black. You know, like I could talk about it. I'm black, but I understand you white people. You can't hang out with Bert like I can and insult everybody left and right. Can't do that. Only us black people can do it.
Speaking of Bob, I like how Evan with the kite thing. Well, how come Ion doesn't talk about kites? So that's the buzzword or the button that Ion can push with Evan.
Yeah. Oh, man, every time I talk to Evan, there's something Ion's done she can't take. And she's been put through a lot of changes by Ion. You know, I don't know if she's there, overcome them, but Ion, she's an average outraged person with the normal grievances, and Ion is illegitimate. It's not correct what Ion does.
They are there to push all buttons and change them.
Yeah. So, did you hear me on What Human or What Youth? I said, we're going to Kike Wanted. That's our new album, our new cut. Kike Wanted.
Kike Wanted. I wanted Kike Wanted.
Yeah. WAP Wanted is coming up. WAP, Dago, Spago, what are some of these other terms? But the... Alan is... Remember, he's a gangster kid. He's basically brought up... He isn't in the mafia, but he was rough. He was a hustler as a kid. I think he mentions that Frankie guy who sounds like the local mafia dope dealer. He got his drugs to distribute from that guy. But because he was creative and could be a culture guy, he got into the Crowley commune. He was a writer. He skimped along, but he's basically an old, dried-up, tough guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... Remember that famous Saturday Night Live skit where the mafia guy, some therapist is trying to do therapy on the mafia Godfather? That was pretty funny.
Was that guy from The Sopranos?
I don't know. It might have been before then because I never saw. I haven't seen Saturday Night Live
ago,
in 40
years. Pretty old.
Yeah, it's very old, but it might have been done there. But I seem to think it was there before that. There was some other movie with Billy Crystal and. Who's the guy who's in all the mafia movies?
De Niro.
De Niro? I think it's De Niro.
Anger Management.
Yeah.
Movie.
I think that was a satire. And that's long before The Sopranos, right?
Yeah, long.
Yeah. But really, I stopped watching Saturday Night Live by late 70s. I only saw it a few years.
Wow, anyways, it used to come on back then?
Who used to come on? What?
Saturday Night Live, SNL used to come on back in the 70s?
It started in 75, 76.
Yes.
It was good then.
Yeah,
it was.
Hmm.
Yeah, it had a good run for about 5 years, late 70s with the main, you know, Belushi, Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd, all those people. Chevy Chase kind of blew it. He was the first to what do you call it, crossover. They liked him, somebody liked him, and they put him in the movies, and then he did crummy movies, but he missed all the excitement that was going on in that show for the next few years because he was only there 1 year.
Yeah, they were really pushing the limit of television with their comedy.
Right, but you know that they were the what do you call them, the aesthetes, the expert, the connoisseurs. They prefer SCTV being down up in Toronto and in Edmonton. You know about SCTV?
No.
No.
Oh, if that's on YouTube, watch SCTV. That's probably better than Saturday Night Live, done by these, well, some Americans, some Canadians. It's a satire on a TV station.
Okay. SCTV.
Yeah. SC, like So Crafty.
So Crafty. SCTV. Okay.
Okay. Awesome. Matter of fact, I'm going to check, see if they're on, wonder if Prime has something like that. I never thought of that. I mean, that would be, you go back and watch that. Maybe it's old fashioned now, but they were really clever and smart and great. That's where, you know, what did Mike Myers do? Wayne's World. That was developed from Bob and Doug. Now, you know, Bob and Doug is me and Stang. But anyways, the McKenzie brothers, they had a show called The Great White North, and there was these Canadian hosers. You should look at some of that. That's Wayne's World before. And, you know, and Mike Myers came from Scarborough, Toronto, so he would have watched that stuff as a kid.
Okay.
In Wayne's World, it was
suburb of Toronto.
It was Keanu Reeves, and then he went on to do The Matrix.
But, you know, this is, you know them. They're, you know that guy who did the movie Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Oh, yeah, I know.
The father?
That comedian.
Yeah, David somebody, and Rick Moranis, something like that.
David Spade?
No. I'll look it up. Just let me see a second. City TV. Is that what it was called? Damn, they don't seem to have it. But that's something worth looking up. SCTV. Maybe Netflix has it. Let me just look up SC, get the two guys. They had minor solo careers later.
Oh, you mean John Candy?
He was part of that, yeah.
Oh, the father was Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis.
Yes.
And Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Here it is. It says the official SCTV on YouTube.
Yeah.
So they've got lots of segments, it looks like. You know, I guess, well, at least there's six here. So if you put in SCTV on YouTube, classic clips come up. So that's a start. But, yeah, John Candy, he went on to become the biggest of that group. But they had Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Dave Thomas. And did we say Rick Moranis? Was that the other name?
Yes.
Yeah.
You see what Errol Ramis, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Dave Thomas, Andrew Martin, John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, Harold Ramis. Harold Ramis just died recently. Brian Doyle Murray. I think he was Bill Murray's brother. Dick Robin Duke. Rick Moranis, yeah. Michael, you know Martin Short?
Mm-hmm.
He's actually in the news right now because of a controversial... this New York plastic surgeon committed suicide last week. And Tina Fey has a new show, and she satirized this guy. So the controversy was, did he get upset from the satire? And the satire was done by Martin Short of the hair design of the plastic surgeon. So he killed himself. So that's the issue. And Martin Short used to be on SCTV. So that's something you guys got to look at. I'm never wrong in my entertainment choices. You'll see. Martin Short, right. The thing is, Saturday Night Live is the American version, the American dominant Toronto McLuhan perspective. SCTV is the Canadian McLuhan version perspective. So it's maybe more subtle than the the kinetic space of America is more what you get with Saturday Night Live. But the subtle quadraphenic tactile reality of Canada is SCTV.
Okay.
Why don't I just, we should play one. Let's just see, let's finish Rick, Alan first. So here we have, his columns are so short. They're really quite short. Okay, so this one is called Pity for Roadkill. Subtitled, She's Just a Sad Raccoon. And it's a picture of a hornet or something squashed. Or no, maybe it's a raccoon.
It's
a raccoon. Looks like a bug. squashed on the road. He says, we want to know whether he's still with Daisy. All right, so he's saying that they made up. They apologized. So that means she should be going to New Jersey with him. So it says, I'm going back to New Jersey. I'm not moving in with my cousin. I'm selling my car and heading for Europe. Love it, in quotes, love it or leave it. Isn't that how the old saw goes? S-A-W. Love it or leave it. Isn't that how the old saw goes? Well, I certainly don't love it, so I guess I'll leave. Daisy changed her mind again. She thinks her 40-year-old junkie son needs more time with her after 4 weeks of methadone detox in her Florida double wide. She can have him. I will relentlessly forget her. She'll die alone. She'll never see Copenhagen. Well, that's sad. Daisy didn't go.
He's leaving without her.
Now, you've read this already, right?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay, good. Everything was going swimmingly this past week. We were back on track for a bright future together. Her son, Jonah, finally got off his ass after 2 weeks of holing up in her middle bedroom making awful noises and started helping her with the renovations at her place. She said to me, quote, you're the only one who really cares about me. You've been my best friend for 15 years, unquote. This past Wednesday, I went over to drop off $20 for some weed from the connection I found her in the trailer park. Right after she took the money, she started going all weepy and said, quote, I can't put him out next week. He needs more time, unquote. Alan says, I don't have any more time. I spent slightly, so this junkie, he was worried about this junkie son coming. Fucking junkie son ruined it for him. I don't have any more time. I spent slightly over $1,000 to get out of my lease because I'd rather give her my $450 per month than hand it over to a lying, thieving landlord. She has known for months that I have to be out of this place by April 15th. Her junkie son and I have hated each other for years. She wants me to move in with him there. She wants me to move in with him there. I can see the end result of that. Yet another Florida story, drugs and violence. I don't live with junkies. I never have, and I never will. Now she tells me, quote, my brother says you're a vampire, unquote. This is from her brother John. Okay, so this is another guy. I remember her two brothers were arrested for drug dealing. And the mother, Daisy's mother, spent all her inheritance trying to make sure John had a comfortable imprisonment. So this brother, like they're white trash or some kind of trash, and they note that Alan's a saint among the trash, right? He's a guy that they all know is different, so they they nail him. And now she tells me, my brother says you're a vampire. This is from her brother John, a felon who once bragged to me about turning his daughter on to cocaine. He thinks that's, quote, responsible parenting, unquote, because he said, better me than some stranger. Right? Some stranger could have turned on his daughter, but no, he didn't. This is semi-drug mafia people talk, right? They grew up in this culture. He works the counter at a convenience store. That's as far as he will get. His daughter is a hairdresser and part-time dominatrix, some kind of mall rat, hot topic, pseudo-goth throwback to the 1980s. It's like a John Waters movie. See, he's sophisticated enough to know what it refers to, a John Waters movie, you know, Divine and those kind of, remember Divine? John Waters' creation, Divine?
Mm-mm.
You don't remember that? Pink Flamingos?
No, no.
Early 70s?
Pink Flamingos, yes. Mm-hmm. I remember Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, remember it ends with him eating dog shit. Divine eats... and eats the dog shit. It's like a John Waters movie. Now she tells me, quote, Jonah says you're acting like a teenager, unquote. This from a 40-year-old man who had 6 months of detox but chose to wait until mummy could change his filthy diapers for him. I am past being hurt by this shit. It's America. It's Florida. What did you expect? One of the most wonderful gifts I obtained from my wretched and relentlessly violent adoptive parents was the capacity to switch off my heart at will and simply go completely cold and indifferent to the fate of anyone too weak-minded or lacking in will or basic loyalty to be worthy of any, to be worthy of my attention. Daisy's attempts at cruelty are laughable. All I have to do is withdraw, and that's what I'm doing. No revenge, no pranks, no regrets. No feelings at all, except maybe a little pity. Just a little, sort of like what I feel when I drive past roadkill. I'm glad I came down here and tried to start a new life with her. I'm glad she showed me who she really is and told me what she really thinks of me. I was going to move in with her, help support her, find her a good holistic doctor to help with her PCV. What's that, PCV? Anybody know?
No, PCV.
I can look that up.
I know, yeah.
So he says, I was going to take her to a kitty cat circus next week at the Hippodrome here in Gainesville. Now I don't have to do any of that. It's all about me now. It's all about me now. See, it's becoming me. It's becoming Bob. It's all about me now, and I'm going to Europe. Maybe I'll send her a postcard. Probably not. She's just a sad raccoon, made a bad decision, got squashed flat on the highway. You see it all the time. Well, there it is, a sad ending. Well, we're going to get some interesting adventures, hopefully, in Europe. He'll be pissed off at Europe. Everyone will drive him fucking batty over there, right?
Yeah, wherever you are, there you are.
Yeah, he's taking himself. He's avoiding me. Shouldn't do that. Shouldn't. He's on a suicide case. PCV, positive crankcase ventilation. Let's see, PCV. So he's saying she's a crank. Packed cell volume, polycythemia vera, porcine circovirus, chemotherapy regimen for brain tumors, positive crankcase, a common type of crankcase ventilation system. Passenger carrying vehicle. A crankcase ventilation system is one is, I thought it was a psychological condition to crank, you know, is a one-way passage for gases to escape in a controlled manner from the crankcase of an internal combustion engine. So it's a metaphor in some way. Or it's a little
It's a new Malco conjugate vaccine.
A new what?
It's a vaccine, and it's okay. Spelled T-N-E-U. Pneumococcal conjugate vaccine.
Okay. So it's either a psychological problem.
Yeah.
Or
the bacterium spreads through person-to-person contact and can cause such serious infections as pneumonia, blood infections, and bacterial meningitis. So that's
you're saying the vaccine does that?
What that thing is, what the pneumococcal is, and there's a vaccine for it. That's what it does.
Oh, okay. So it could be a disease. So what's the disease?
It's spelled, if you look it up, PCV, one of the things that pop up is P-N-E-U, like pneumonia, P-N-E-U-M-O-C-O-C-C-A-L, pneumococcal.
Okay, well, it sounds like a medical condition. Okay, so now what we're going to do is read the one that you guys found for me. You found the one I couldn't find. Remember, he's not, let's see. You know, remember, you can't get a lot of the stuff, but you or Susanna or Sarah found the missing one that wasn't listed anywhere anymore. So,
you don't remember the title?
No, here it is. Yeah, A Brief History of S&M in America. Now, this gives an early description of his life, you know, of what he did in the late teens, early 20s, and into his Aleister Crowley stuff. Now, what's that weird scraping noise? We had that last week. You guys hear that? I'm going to put everybody on mute. So for this, you guys don't hear that scraping sound?
No, I heard it.
Right. Okay, so we got... Who's anonymous coming in? Want to speak? Yeah, you.
Yeah.
You have a name?
Yes.
What could we possibly be asking you? Like your age or how's the weather there? What are we asking you?
How is the weather?
Is this that Deb scumbag out of Boston? No. Prescott's from Boston. Where do you live? Don't you live in Boston, too?
Yeah.
So you're not even polite enough to get off the speakerphone.
What?
Yeah, what? That's the problem. Oh, well. We've done her. So, I'm muting everybody. Anybody want to say anything before we go into this wonderful story? This is a really good story. This is his biography. And I thank whoever found it for finding it. So you ready? Everybody ready?
Ready.
Yes.
Yeah. Then this is longer.
All participants are now muted.
Okay. So he says, this is called A Brief History of S&M in America. I hate the word masochist. It implies a fondness for turgid prose and lugubrious romance. Leopold von Sacher Masoch was the worst writer this side of Edward Bulwer Lytton, and his sense of what constitutes romance clearly indicates lead poisoning or possibly even mercury exposure. Algolagnia, that's in quotes, algolagnia is no better. It sounds like some kind of eating disorder. Just pronouncing it out loud makes me feel vaguely bulimic. In my particular case, slave or submissive are even more ridiculous. I'm about as submissive as a cat, and I grew up on the road, touring in shows with room service and catering. A decent slave would be versed in things like making beds, dusting, vacuuming, laundry, things like that. Domestic chores. I am completely ignorant of that stuff. That's where we're similar. In my own life, I farm it out as much as possible. That's what I do. I use throwaway plates, bowls, cups, and utensils, and I do my laundry like a college kid. I do the laundry, too. I don't sort it out, and I don't fold it. Well, I do that. But Carolyn has to start it. I don't know how to make the laundry machine. Let me just go like this. I don't unmute.
All participants are now unmuted. All participants are now unmuted.
Know how to put the stuff in the laundry machine. You know, the liquid, the sticky stuff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn has to do that part.
And what if she's not home?
Laundry doesn't get done.
Oh, boy.
I don't have that much laundry, though. That's what's great about this place. So she can put the liquid in. I've done it once or twice over the past couple of years, but I don't do it enough to remember how to do it, right? When you have six-month gaps, you can't remember what actually buttons you're supposed to press. So she puts the liquid in, and then I'll put the stuff in and press the on buttons. I know when something is permapressed, maybe that's the word, and not. Whatever the word is, it's when you switch to a certain kind of stuff. And you do that for a certain, her clothing. But then there's, cotton, normal. So, I do the laundry. What'd he say? He does do the laundry.
Like a college kid.
Yeah, I do my laundry like a college kid. I don't sort it and I don't fold it. I do sort it and I do fold it. Carolyn's not very good at that. She ain't got the patience for that. So it works out perfect.
All participants are now muted.
Just unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
She will and won't do. It's totally complimentary to what I do, you know? I take the garbage out. She won't. I don't trust her. She blow it.
You don't trust her to take the garbage out?
No way.
Where is she going to take it?
Well, you have to put it, you have to take it out of the kitchen container, and it could be dripping. And then if it's dripping crap, over the carpet. That's a disaster. Now, you know, we've been here for, let's see, almost six and a half years. It only dripped once slightly the other day in 6.5 years. And I caught it. She wouldn't have caught it. I did. So no disaster. But it's the really good garbage bags here. They don't puncture. They don't cause that drip. So, but I'm the one who really pays attention to it. And why am I telling you this? Why am I even talking to you people?
It's complimentary. See, there's things that you don't like to do.
Why am I on the phone? What the fuck's happening? What? Bob wakes up after 30 years on the radio. Wait, what the fuck's going on here? This is an MK Ultra experiment. It's Truman Show.
Why am I here?
Yeah. Who's Alan Cabal? Why am I looking at a template with a bunch of phone numbers on it? and little red markings coming out of it. Okay, so funny joke, Bob. Okay, back to seriousness. What were we just saying? Carolyn doesn't do the laundry. The garbage I do. All right? That's good, right?
Okay, yes.
Now, you know what's neat? Now, by next Wednesday, I'll be around. I'll suddenly hear this raucous laughter. That'll be Carolyn listening to this part, right? This
is what, yes.
I placed it in her past, so it'll be part of her then on Wednesday. Okay, so yeah, I think I explained all that, right? We got to go back to the story.
All participants are now muted.
So I don't sort it and I don't fold it, meaning the laundry. I hire somebody cheap to come in and clean my apartment when I deem that necessary. Well, that's what we do. We have people clean our place. I don't like being categorized, and self-categorization is merely a way of limiting yourself. That's me. I don't even identify as this meat bag I'm trapped in. That's me. Maybe I am mostly the advanced sentient hives of bacteria in the gut, chatting away like some microscopic organic Facebook. Let's read that again. Maybe I am mostly the advanced sentient hives of bacteria in the gut, chattering away like some microscopic organic Facebook. Maybe my brain is just a server farm in the Menlo Park of my body. Things change. Now, we can enhance that image of himself through ion and see ourselves as a, you know, RNA, DNA, a cellular factor. Wouldn't overlay the bacteria, but we can see ourselves tiny, like he's saying. Things change. As Richard Bach once said, quote, argue for your limitations and you get to keep them. See, there's that phrase, argue for your limitations, right out of ION. Of course, ION got it from Richard Bach, because I know ION likes Richard Bach. They've praised his books. So I guess he coined that phrase, argue for your limitations and you get to keep them. So Alan says, I've been quite open about my sexuality since high school. I took a lot of hits for it, both literally and figuratively, but being beaten up occasionally by closet queen hypermasculine morons and shunned by tight-ass crypto-puritans was easily eclipsed and outweighed by the incredible sexual adventures I was having. I consider myself blessed to have come of age in those halcyon years between the pill and the plague. You who came later shall never live so loose nor so large. I first set foot in an S&M club on March 28, 1979. March 28th. That was the day I spoke at Lincoln Center in the McLuhan Symposium in 1998. So 19 years later, I do my S&M on the college circuit. And it's Bob is 19, so there's the poetry. I first set foot in an S&M club on March 28, 1979, 19 years before Bob gave his great lecture on McLuhan, which we can hear anytime. We got it right here on recording, March 28, 1998. But he's talking 1979. I remember the date because that was the night that a partial nuclear meltdown occurred at the Three Mile Island nuclear facility in Pennsylvania. I'd had a lot of thrilling experiences with friends and lovers, including a tumultuous 3-year relationship with a gorgeous and utterly demented, thwarted ballet dancer. And I'd been exhibited at private parties, but I'd never been to an actual club before. I'd visited a few gay S&M bars, but I'm predominantly attracted to women. and I found the lack of hygiene on the gay circuit appalling. So he's experiencing a club in a new way that he hadn't had before. 3-year relationship. So he would have been 1953. He'd be 26 years old. 25 or 26 years old. Every Thursday night, Chateau 19 occupied the premises of a swingers club called Night Moves on 19th. Oh, there's Bob's number.